Welcome to the IT Babble Podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Oh, Tony. Tony, the first thing was about spring break, but Skype has inspired me. And I've replaced the spring break, like, what's everybody doing on spring break? What are you gonna with new Skype and the AI, the new Bing AI tools that are integrated into it to make life so much better for us. Much better.
And my spring break's over. My children ruined it for me, so we can just move on.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear about that. For not a lot of people use Skype too much anymore, but Tony and I still use it, for IT Babble podcast. And, we were greeted with, it's like Christmas in March, Tony.
It's so annoying. Okay. We have two agenda items, one and two. Let's just combine them.
Yeah.
Okay. So my buddy calls me on Skype, and this was the other day. And I had Skype open on my phone, which is fine. Then I start getting these messages from Skype. Hey, if you need something, just ask. I was like, why am I going to use Skype to look anything up? I'm not.
Yeah.
It works for calling. It's decent if you're doing podcasts, you want to do recordings or whatever. But outside of that, it's not a social network. It's not a search engine. And the interface on Skype is so bad that I don't want to use it for anything. Like, if it were a blank screen, maybe, where it just opened and worked, and I could ask a question, and it could show up in, like, 20-point font on my phone in big letters, something like that, where I could read it. But, like, we were just complaining about how the pop-up window, you can't get rid of it if you minimize your window.
Yeah, for people who don't know, if you have Skype and you're on a video call and you minimize Skype, maybe to look at a document or whatever, it will automatically pop up a window so you can still see the other person or people in the chat. And you can close it, but it will continually pop it up over and over again. And for the longest time, it would pop it up even if you had Skype open. Like maybe you had it on Windows, maybe you had it on your left pane and you had documents on your right pane and you clicked away from Skype, it would then open up the window. Tony just put an article in the chat and I didn't open up the chat and my entire screen went faded to blue and then the link of the article in huge, giant, like impact font showed up right across the middle of the screen and then it faded away.
I'll tell you what that is, because I've been working on a secret project, which I'm not going to talk about because it's secret.
Super secret.
That is the AI reviewing the article or trying to find it or whatever it's going to do with it. Let's just connect it all together.
Just bring it to
the last week. In the last week, there's a million new apps and AI things on the market. Everyone's going to do it. Everyone's going to do it, and it's going to be so annoying that no one is going to use it. I mean, this stuff is annoying. If you want to bring up ChatGPT and use it, and when you're done, close it, that makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
If you want to go to, I use Brave, the Brave browser. They've added a little AI summarizer to the top, so when you search for stuff, it gives you a little summary. It's not a link. It's just a summary that's very user-friendly. There's nothing else to it. But constantly having these AIs ask you questions. Like I installed an AI app on my phone that works with ChatGPT. It constantly tries to send me a notification asking me if I need to ask it something.
Yeah, because it's trying to gather data, I imagine, right? It's trying to gather as much
model. Here's the way AI should work. You shouldn't do anything. It should just, like, let's say that I'm working on a document and it's got two pages and I'm writing about a topic and I'm on paragraph 4. The AI should be like, this paragraph is repetitive and very similar to paragraph 2. That's how it should work. It should just detect it, pattern match, and give you some ideas. It shouldn't be like, hey, you want to tell me if you're having problems with your document right now? Like, I'm just like, stop it. Just stop it. So for all those out there listening, my interface for ChatGPT now is in my terminal on my Linux machine, not through the app anymore. I open the terminal, I connect, I ask questions, and I close it. And I'll tell you what, I not only get, I think I get better results, but I get zero annoyance. I just, the, and it's like everyone's, I figured like this would, I figured this would happen. Everybody just was like, oh yeah, we're going to jump in and we're going to do it. And we're going to,
we're going to put it right in their face. They're not going to have a choice.
Like a website. It's like, you can build your own AI app in 5 minutes. What products on the market can the average person design and build that are useful, well thought out, and have a purpose in 5 minutes?
I'm thinking of a number less than 1%.
It's ridiculous. And so everyone's just doing it. And at the same time, there's going to be the prices for this stuff. So I've noticed like the way this works is that if you're going to build a product with AI, you have to get an API license key. And then you're charged so much for, let's just say, the computing time you use.
Yeah.
So OpenAI has come in with this huge investment behind them. So they're kind of undercutting the competition. That is not going to last for long. They have a subsidy to make it cheap. Mm-hmm. It's like when a Chinese manufacturer decides to sell something at a loss for a while to get into the market. That's very common in China. They do that. It's very difficult to do that in the United States.
Uber did that when they first came into the market. They were so subsidized, so much capital funding, VC funding, that they were able to undercut taxis significantly. And but that is going away. Like, it's already gone away, I think. I think they're more expensive.
That's right. Uber's now pretty expensive. Yep. And like Google's AI tech that they've had in the cloud for quite a while, they just didn't push it. Yeah. It is about four to eight times more expensive than OpenAI. But I'll tell you what, that's probably the price. Mm-hmm. It's not like Google doesn't have their own data centers. You've got to pay for, it's not just about making money. You have to pay for the resources the AI is using. And I've been running two different AI platforms now on my, just on my laptop in a limited version. And they use a lot of power. Like, I have my laptop, I have a special laptop, and it actually is loaded with fans, and I can hit a button, and it sounds like a jet engine. And I need to do that because when these things start working, I have to cool the laptop off. So, and I'm doing some very simple work, okay? So imagine a billion of me. So this is not free. And there's going to be an upward limit. You're going to make your app. You're going to be paying like $20 a month. It's going to be great. Yeah. And then in 8 months, you're going to get a bill for like $200 a month. And then 8 months later, you're going to get a bill for like $1,200 a month.
Yeah.
And you're going to find out that AT&T owns this company, and they're in charge of the billing because that's how AT&T works.
AT&T billing is the worst. Maybe Comcast is pretty bad. No, I use Notion. I use Notion as a note-taking app. I find it's very clean and easy. They've integrated ChatGPT into it. And I think it's $11 a month if you want to use it. You get, I think, 20 queries. I don't know if it's free per month or just free in total. So you can try it out. It's not intrusive. It's not like, you know, in your face like you're talking about where it's like, hey, do you need some help?
You're paying for the integration.
Yeah.
You're paying for it.
And anyway, there you go, man.
So this is my new prediction that AI technically works. It's really powerful.
Oops,
it can solve so many problems, and it's going to fail because it's annoying. Like that's my prediction. You know, I hate to say it, Patrick, but apparently people who are good at marketing, they have a place on our planet.
Think
about it. Like, name one AI product that's on the market right now that Steve Jobs would have approved of.
Oh man,
maybe what's working in Grammarly. Maybe.
Well, Grammarly now uses ChatGPT. Did you see that? They've integrated it for an additional cost.
Yeah, yeah. And because Grammarly doesn't really have a external search system to access information outside of what you're typing. But that's what it seems like to me. I don't really know how it works. It's proprietary, but that's what it seems like to me. So, yeah, but why not? I mean, if you can say, hey, like, we don't really need it, but we'll just ask people, and if they want to pay for it, we'll integrate it.
Yeah.
But just that I can't think of a single product, really, that Steve Jobs would have approved of. Because if you just think about the iPhone, right? When the iPhone came out, there were other phones that had touch. There was a lot of stuff on the market. Nokia, BlackBerry, a lot of stuff on the market. And to be fair, the first iPhone was very limited.
Yeah.
However,
camera was terrible. It was
the things on it that worked. The touch was easy. The keyboard was annoying because you had to type a lot. There wasn't a swipe or anything, but it was responsive and it worked.
Yep. Their autocorrect was decent at launch.
Yeah. So all the core worked, and that was the Steve Jobs way. Like, I'm sure Apple could have added all the features that BlackBerry had initially, but they didn't. They put it out there in the market. And then what happened? It was so popular, people were like bootlegging them. I remember in Dubai, they were going for like $2,000, $3,000, $4,000.
Yep. Well, I was in Kuwait when they launched, and you could buy them on the gray market. They were usually Italian. I'm not sure why they got them. Maybe that's
where they got them from.
That's
Italy.
Where they got them for. And you paid, let's see, because I think they were going for under contract in America, they were going for like $600 or $700, and Kuwait, you can get them for $1,000. For about $900 to $1,000. Of course, you just changed the language to English, and everything worked the same.
So just like I don't know, like it's unfortunate, but this being, I mean, Microsoft is one of the biggest investors, and somebody in Microsoft's like, let's do it, let's push Bing AI into Skype. That was a meeting. So whoever did that, A, doesn't use Skype. And B is the person who designed this window that won't close.
This is
the same person.
Yeah.
This is the person who probably makes a lot of money but doesn't have friends. And maybe he has a flip phone.
I disagree. I think they make a lot of money, but they have lots of friends. And they don't know how to say no to bad ideas. And so they're the project manager. And they're like, hey, Tony, are we going out for drinks? Yeah, absolutely. I know it's only Wednesday, but we're going to do a half day today, and we're going to remote work from the bar. How's that sound? Great. I got this great idea of this window in Skype that never closes. What do you think? Well, I guess I love it. I guess you could tell me a little bit more at the bar, and then we'll put it. We'll get the devs on it.
Patrick, I may have a title for our episode.
Yeah, let's hear it.
First, I've got to send you an image because I know you're going to need an image.
Okay, you know what? Hold on. Give me a second here. Let me close the chat because I want to see the image take over my entire effing screen.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So let's see Bing AI do this.
The current AIs on the market are equivalent to Homer Simpson's card that he invented, the Homer.
It just gave me a link. It didn't. It didn't.
Oh, and the window popped back up.
Oh, the Homer, man, that is the greatest car ever.
My brain just went there. It was like, you know what this is, Tony? This is the Homer.
This is it. I love it.
And here's another one. This one actually might be better just for the podcast. There we go.
Now, I got chat open and it didn't pop up. But it didn't pop up the image. It just popped up the link where you found the image from.
Yeah, and I can see the link and the image. That makes a lot of sense. So anyway, so that's my prediction. We went from having something that could possibly change the world to the Homer.
Yeah. Well Tony, Shane, to slightly change gears, I am looking forward to attending the Atlas conference. And but before that, I'm attending a webinar by Isaacs, and Isaacs is a school accreditation organization. I think they're accredited. Yeah. And for independent schools. And they are they're doing a webinar about how to use ChatGPT in the classroom equitably and responsibly with your students. So I don't know much more about the webinar than that, but I'm looking forward to it. I know one of the questions I'm going to ask is how do you get around the terms of service about the age limit when it comes to ChatGPT? And Tony, I think you may know of a solution. Or is it not a solution? Is it just a clever marketing?
I've been working with the Atlas Group. They put a task force together, and yep. I've been working on some policy stuff. And they're doing good work. Like, they're good. They're doing good work, and they're not misleading anybody. But there was a lot of, fanfare around the fact that ChatGPT changed their terms of service, because before it said you had to be over 18.
Yep.
So they were like, boom, check it out now. And now it says, Patrick, you have to be over 13, and if you're under 18, you need a letter from your parents. So what I'm telling everybody is that is the same as being 18 and over. Now, that means that unless you alter your AUP and your contract that goes out to your parents that says you need to put a separate document in.
Yep.
That document needs to say, we used a product called ChatGPT by OpenAI. It's only allowed to be used by children who are under 18.
Yep.
If there's parental consent. Or you could be more honest and say, this product's for 18 and over. We would like the kids to use it. Will you agree? Because that's really what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now, this is why this is kind of ridiculous. There isn't another product in the school that we do that with.
Yeah, nothing.
We're not like, hey, yeah. Look, we want to show non-kids Netflix. Can you sign this document? Even though we're not allowed to legally, and also Netflix says we're not allowed to because we're a school, we want you to sign it saying that it's legal for us to do these two illegal things. So you're asking parents to sign a waiver. So let's just say everybody's on board. You need to go out and get documentation for every student. I would honestly say that you need to review this every year, because ChatGPT currently and these AIs can't work through your filter, as far as I know. So you can't filter the content.
Nope.
So yep. It's all unfiltered content. It's not just about giving your data away. It's all unfiltered content. So everybody's all excited. It's like, okay, so you throw these questions out. So how are you getting? So they're like, well, we know. Okay. You're right, Tony. You're right. But we're going to get the paperwork. So then, Patrick, let's just concede. We're getting the paperwork.
Parents have all agreed.
They've all agreed. Okay. Yep. Second, do you take E-rate money? Well, yeah. Okay. Well, are you going to put in your renewal that you're using a product that can't be filtered? Because some E-rate contracts require filtering.
That's right. That's right.
E-rate means that you're probably getting money from the government for your bandwidth
yep.
in the United States. So probably want to confirm that you can get your money if you're using an unfiltered product. So you need to do that. So Patrick, let's check that box off. E-rate doesn't care.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're good to go, but we're a Google Workspace school. What did Google make us do last year, Patrick? Google made us go through and mark the ages of all of our users in Google Workspace.
Oh.
They made us say that the email addresses were below 13, between 13 and 18.
Oh, that's right.
Over
yep.
18.
Yes, they did.
So how can you use a Google Workspace account that's limited to not over 18, so between 13 and 18, for a service that's 18 and over? How can you do that?
Yeah.
The kids are going to go online and try to sign up for it. Google has you do that because Google knows what's 18 and over.
Yep. And so, if you try to use Google Bard at your school with your school Google account, it will say no, unless you've gone through and marked specifically certain accounts that are yes. over 18. Yep.
Yeah.
It will not allow you.
So you're now also saying, okay, we also have to find a way around the 18 and over rule within Google to make the email addresses work for registration. Now, that is kind of a big problem for so many reasons, because again, we don't unblock other things for students. So you're going to make all your students between the age of 14 and 18 look like they're over 18 for the internet, so that you can use ChatGPT with their Gmail accounts, their Google accounts. That just seems like a really bad idea and
yep.
a lot of work.
Agreed. Yeah.
So this, if you take people down this rabbit hole, they eventually just will stop talking to you. And I know this because that's what happens to me when I ask very simple questions. How are you going to deal with this situation? And they eventually just say, well, you know, we're just moving forward. It's the future. That's what they say.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
we're breaking rules.
They haven't thought about this. They haven't gone to a CFO or anybody else that deals with risk management and sat down. They've talked to an attorney, and the attorney, this is what happens. Oh, yeah, if the parents sign it, it's fine. Does the attorney know how Google Workspace works? No. Do they know all the other things that are going to be open if you open this? No. Hmm. Are they aware of the E-rate? Unlikely.
Yeah.
So it's basically like they're looking for someone to tell them yes, and then they move forward.
Yeah, anybody will tell them yes.
So my strategy has been not to argue. I put out the arguments, and I let it sit. And I hope that people kind of come back to it. And I believe wholeheartedly that we are going to have lawsuits by next fall with a lot of this stuff. It's not going to take much for a parent to get mad or something bad to happen, and there's going to be a lawsuit.
Well, there's lawsuits right now about the image AI, the image some of the image generators, not DALL-E. Well, actually, the OpenAI DALL-E 2 might be there, but it's just art, because it's pulling references from actual artwork and sticking it on in these AI generated images, and people are like, that's our work.
Yep.
And you're not a credit. And you're not giving us a credit. You're not telling who it is and all that stuff. And yeah.
And it also seems to me, and I think this is fine for the design of how the SIS stuff works, but I believe that there's a little bit of deception. So I've looked into how these models work, and they are very complicated, but they're based off of statistical likelihood. So for example, and that is a very simple way to put it. These things are very complicated. I had an engineer at Amazon tell me that for an AI to look at a photo and tell you if you have skin cancer, it needs 100 million points of reference and variables.
Wow. That's a lot of variables.
So this stuff is like legit. It's amazing, and we're ruining it. That's why I'm so vocal about it. We're ruining it early. We're going to ruin it by using it when we shouldn't use it yet. It's not ready for kids. We're going to get lawsuits. We're going to get so much regulation, and it's going to be so annoying that no one's going to want it. That's why I'm annoyed. So anyway, the way these systems work is it's a statistical likelihood. So for example, the AI doesn't have to necessarily know a programming language to know that you need curly brackets, because generally in programming languages, you would have curly brackets in certain places. So statistically, you're going to need them, so it puts them in. It could be wrong, but it's probably not. That's just keep that in your head. So for it to like grab a piece of art that exists, or for it to cite something in the law that you might need to know to pass a bar exam, seems like to me, also on the back end is a huge database. A database of content that was taken and cached from the internet. So Microsoft's investment, they've had Bing for what, over like 20 years, something like that?
Yeah, it's been a while, yeah.
So imagine taking all the knowledge that Bing has and allowing access to that with OpenAI. Now you get statistical analysis, most likely word order. And you also get things like Bing can tell you which ads were the best. So you can study that and then make new ads. But you're really making it from what Bing knew. You didn't just come up with it based on your statistical analysis.
Yep.
Like you're using outside data. There has to be a point where the data is introduced. And so I think this is clearly how the art stuff works, and the art is a derivative of the text. So the text comes first, and then someone's like, hey, how about we just load a bunch of images in that already exist in like Wikimedia Commons and stuff and let it learn from that? Well, if it does that and then it uses those images, that's not the same as creating an image.
Yep.
So I think we're going to see a lawsuit that actually forces them to admit okay, it's not just a large language model. There's also a massive database on the back end that it can pull from, and that's data that Microsoft collected for decades and Google collected for decades, et cetera.
Yeah, social media has been collecting for decades too. I mean, imagine it's that stuff is going to get introduced into it eventually.
So yeah, Patrick, just craft your questions, make them short and simple.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone says, "Oh, well, they changed the terms of service," I'm like, "Yeah, but you, what's the difference? You're not allowed to use it unless you get a contract from parents."
That's right.
Oh yeah, yeah, we have to get a contract. Well, what will happen if some parents? Are you going to tell the parents the risk involved in using it, like it's not filtered? Yeah, yeah, we'll tell them. Well, what are you going to do if a percentage of parents don't do the contract?
Yeah.
How well the teacher will use the AI for the kids. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Like that's all you really need to do is walk them through the logic.
How much time does a teacher, how much is that going to take? You know, what, like 3 minutes per student? You get a class of 25 kids. That's 15 of them. So 45 minutes, you're going to sit there doing AI, you know, so working with ChatGPT with them individually.
No. In a recent article I wrote, I said, you know, this strategy is what we used to call in the early 2000s a digital divide. That's what you're creating if you have a strategy that is not inclusive of all the students.
That's right.
And you're asking parents to sign up for something they don't understand. And if you don't tell them it's not filtered, I think that is just a lawsuit ready to happen.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I'm with you. And and we can't see, even with monitoring tools, we can't see exactly what's being inputted into ChatGPT. Like you can't go Guardian, Cisco, those whatever networks you're using. You're not going to see the queries that are being and the results that are coming back.
So there is a way, and I've thought about this. There is a way to do this if you really wanted to monitor it, and if you as a school wanted to pay for it, okay, you could set it up so that every account sends its all the queries and results to a log. You can do that. I've been doing it. It works really well, but doing it for like 400 kids, I mean. What's funny is if you did it for 400 kids and you used the AI to monitor the log, it would work. Monitor this log. Yeah, and I'm not being hyperbolic here. That works. The AI can monitor itself if you know what you're doing. So I get a lot of pushback when I make these comments, like I'm an AI hater. I'm probably now more experienced using these tools than almost everybody who's promoting them in ebooks, because I'm using them at like the core level. I'm using multiple tools from OpenAI, not just ChatGPT. I'm seeing a lot of great options out there that are all gonna die because of what we're doing early. I mean, I don't know another way to explain it. It's just kind of like, what if the first cars used jet fuel instead of gasoline? Think about that. That's kind of where we're at. Like, oh yeah, cars are so dangerous. Everyone blows up. That's what would have happened. Wasn't he driving at like 200 miles an hour? Yeah, but like it's not his fault. The car goes 200.
it's either 200 or stopped.
And I'm signed up for the Bard demo, and I'm going to try to get into it this week.
Yeah.
I've been using Google's text-to-speech AI system. It's phenomenal. It's not free, and I wouldn't say it's cheap, but it's phenomenal. And it gave me some other ideas, like, hey, you know, this is too expensive, but like going this way, like this is some cool stuff that we could do, or maybe on a limited basis. Occasionally we could use this tool and it would be good. So
yeah,
I don't know. There's like a lot. It's maturing. It's growing. But yeah. I think we're going to hit a wall with just abuse, and then we're going to have a little bit of a dip for a couple of years. And then hopefully meaningful, useful tools will emerge.
I saw that, that YouTube video that they put out. It's just a short, like, I don't know, 2-minute video about how Bard will integrate with Google Workspace and all that you can do with it, where you can like take an email chain and it can summarize it for you. You can say, hey, make a Google slideshow out of this email chain, and it can do that as well. Like, there's These are all the things that they're promising. They're just showing examples. They're not promising this is exactly how it's going to work. But it'll most definitely not be with the free version of Google Workspace. So there's your digital divide, Tony, because it'll be so expensive just to run that you will have to pay $5 per student per year, something like that, in order to make up that cost. But all right.
Yep.
And do we have time for I got one more topic here. I don't know if we have time for it or not. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Go ahead. I don't even know what this is.
So Google, this is before AI really kind of took over the stage, but back in March of 2022, so a year ago, Google announced a bunch of tools that they're going to integrate into Google Classroom. And one of them is called Class Sets. And basically, think of almost like flashcards, like Quizlet or something like that, where you can assign it to a classroom, and it's kind of like a quiz. The students answer the questions. It auto-grades it. The teachers can see in real time who got it right, who got it incorrectly, which problems are sticking problems, are problems for the class. And it's kind of like Edulastic in a way where it's you can create your own questions, kind of give a little quiz. It grades it. It'll stick it into the Google Classroom gradebook for you. And it's just – and you can give feedback on it. And if the kids are stuck, like – if they get a question wrong and they keep getting those types of questions wrong, they'll have little guides and it'll find guides and information out on the web and put it in like a little side pane for the students. Like, hey, here's a YouTube video of your teacher teaching this, or here is an article about how to do polynomials or something like that. So kind of interesting. Apparently it's coming out this spring. I don't think it's there yet, but it's something just to keep an eye on, you know? I don't think it's going to be – if it's going to be in the vein of Google Classroom, they have a lot of good ideas, but they don't flesh them out. They just stick it in there, and it's like very basic surface-level stuff. I'm expecting that's what this will be. So if you're using Edulastic, I don't think there's any need to quit using Edulastic and replace it with this. I think it's going to be pretty much the same stuff.
I'm going to send this to some people.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's not a bad idea at all, but
I'm sending it now.
They're a little fuzzy on the details about where it's pulling from. Like, are there filters? Like, how does it know what? Like, if you're doing quadratic equations, how does it know which video to pull on you from YouTube on quadratic equations? Does it find the one with the most views? Or I don't know. So. They're a little fuzzy on those details. And do you, the teacher, get to curate that, or does it just do it automatically? I'm not sure, but it doesn't look terrible though. It doesn't look terrible. But who knows? It might take a back seat now that Bard is now front and center, and ChatGPT and AI tools are. So it may not come out this year at all. But anyway, okay. kind of neat, just something. Put on your radar. That's it. That's all I got. All right. Oh, Tony, man, this AI stuff is wearing me out. I'm excited.
Yeah, I know. It's exhausting.
It's exhausting though. I wonder what Skype will do to help relieve my exhaustion.
We need to get off Skype if you want to relieve your exhaustion. It's just going to start, hey, Patrick, would you like me to order you some food? No, you're Skype. You can't do anything.
Stop it, Skype. Yeah. All you can do is disappoint over and over and over again. Anyway, that's it. That's all I got. Tony, do you have anything else?
Nope, that's it.
All right. That was a good, nice type episode. So let's wrap it up. For IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there.